Hey guys, sports betting season is in full force. NHL and NBA playoffs, we enjoyed those, and now football season is here. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. US, you can receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses also. BetUS is known as America's favorite sports book for a lot of reasons. No matter what the season, BetUS has all the games, NBA, NHL, team, player props, loads of NFL and college plays, whether futures or individual game odds. You can bet UFC matches and props, PGA golf, and round matchups and live betting on most sports, including golf. The online casino has hundreds of games, and the racebook has all your horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable, and the Sharp BetUS mobile platform is easy with full betting options. Follow my lead and partner with a sports betting company with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on a Monday. Hope everybody is having a groovy existence today. Wherever you're listening, could be smack dab in the middle of the circle. Where are we broadcast? We're on in Bristol, Tennessee. What's up, Bristol? So maybe you're in Bristol. Maybe you're in Jackson, Mississippi, or anywhere in between. I don't know. There's a bunch of places. So I appreciate everybody getting here and the conversation we had in the first hour. I want to thank Graham Hall, our good friend from the Gainesville Sun, coming on and talking Florida Gators and the situation that they have right now. Cole Kublik from the SEC Network, also Jocks in Birmingham, not just Florida, but you know, we did ask him about Napier, but all over the Southeastern Conference. Coming up in about 10 minutes, there was an Iron Bowl. Have I even said a word about that yet? I talked a little bit about Alabama. There was an Iron Bowl. And I will personal commentary, and I try not to do this, but I'll give you personal soul-crushing. Soul-crushing. Like, at the end of that game, because people ask me sometimes, are you really a fan? My gosh, yes, I'm a fan. Do you know about, 7 o'clock on Saturday night what I really wanted to do if I had a fireplace? I wanted to go purchase knitting needles, lay them in a fireplace for about an hour, and then just jam it, go total Hamlet, just jam them in my eye. Yes, I'm a fan, and it was the opposite of why you're a fan. So we'll talk Iron Bowl. Drew DeArmond, our good friend from 97.7 ESPN in Huntsville, he'll be with us, give the Bama perspective. And then Matt Moscona, LSU. Ed Ogeron, I've been very transparent. I try to be about everything here, but the comment he made postgame, he's like, folks, I'm packing to go to Destin. He says, I will be there tomorrow. This was Saturday night. Quote, I will be there tomorrow. And then he's in front of the media. He looked at his girlfriend, quote, come on, baby. All I missed was like Elvis singing My Way as he left. But I'm a big fan of Ed Ogeron. And he said, by the way, he's not a good coach. He's not, no. He does not need to be a head coach. He does not need to be leading a program like LSU. Maybe Nicholls State. I don't know. Maybe, whatever. But they get the dub, and it was a real win. And it was because of effort. It was because of the opposite of what me and a lot of other people said was just about to happen, that everybody was going to jump off the truck. And I'll be dang if LSU, including some upperclassmen, including some seniors, grab the rope, folks. Let's all pull the same way. And so credit to them. And so his comment postgame, though, was awesome, that he's packing to go to Destin. He said, they're going to have a new coach in a week and a half. He's like, you don't need me hanging around. So we will talk Bama with Drew. We'll talk LSU with Matt. Right now, I'm just going to go through a couple of headlines. You only have to play it. There was something I brought up that there is a reason you need to care about this, by the way. And I told you the reason you needed to care about it. Do you remember about midseason when I said, folks, it's really, really not good in Durham, North Carolina right now? The program is listing. It's and Duke is not a good football program anyway. When David Cutcliffe is no longer the coach there, you need to care. Why? Because there's a chance somebody with Duke decides it's time to care. Like TCU decided to care, and then they became TCU. And then they became dangerous to you. Houston decided to care. These programs, when they decide to care, like really care and invest, you need to care. I'm an SEC school. They're coming for your coordinator. So that's why you need to care. So if you see the headline, Duke football and head coach David Cutcliffe, this is one of the few times you'll see this headline and it will apply. Mutually agree to part after 14 seasons. I absolutely believe that. And I believe whichever side initiated the meeting, the other one knew what it was about and came prepared. Like in a, yeah, I'm glad you called sort of way. So David Cutcliffe, he's out after 14 years. It's been 14 really good years. 77 wins, that's not nothing. They went to bowls. They won, I think they won a bowl. And I think they won the, when they won a bowl with David Cutcliffe, it was the first bowl they won in like 50-something years. And everybody can win bowls now. There's a bunch of them. But they won their first bowl in like 50 years. And they won a Coastal Division championship. And they were never going to beat Florida State that night. But they played Texas A&M to a standstill. Like Johnny Manziel A&M in the Chick-fil-A Bowl played them to a standstill. So David Cutcliffe is out. Billy Napier's in. Rod Carey out. Do I have to tell y'all who Rod Carey is?
Probably.
Temple head coach. He's out. Lincoln Riley's out, but he's also in. And SMU is about to hire Rhett Lashley as the coach. So says they. Who told you that? They. Well, they talk a lot, don't they? Yes, and Rhett Lashley's going to be a head coach for like a real team with uniforms and a stadium and everything. Those are the headlines. I got a lot more to talk about. Brian Robinson, his lower body injury, which I guess means from the belly button down, somewhere he has an injury. That kid has been a workhorse this year. What a stud. And he's hurt now, and Bama doesn't have a lot of running backs. So, in fact, they may have, if Trey Sanders is 100%, which I don't know if he is, if he's 100%, that gives them one who's 100%. All right, we're going to break, come back, talk Bama next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
There may be an unintended outcome for Georgia fans insisting Jordan Davis be considered for the Heisman. Will Anderson is the better player and far more productive. And if a defensive player is invited to New York, I believe it would be Will Anderson. You don't get to New York by having – Dan, how many tackles Jordan Davis got this year? Like about 20 maybe? I don't know. Will Anderson's almost got that many sacks. So that is how I think you get to New York because Jordan Davis is an amazing player. There is essentially one chance to play defense these days in – modern-day college football, and it's hit the quarterback. That's it. That's how you play defense. That's how you win defensively with almost no exceptions, and Will Anderson absolutely does that. It was not a perfect performance from Alabama the other day. In fact, I told you before the break, it was just an absolute soul-crushing loss for the Auburn side. I believe Auburn played about as well as they could have, and that means scoring – what did you say, Dan?
24. 3.5 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks.
I said 20 tackles. He's got 24 tackles. Okay.
So you would have been under. You would have won the showcase showdown.
So Auburn has a quarterback who can't move. They don't have receivers who win. And they've got a Bama defense who, the like Pete Golding, the only thing he was like, where's Tank? Okay, we're ready. So Auburn played about as well as they could, and we all saw what happened. It was just a tremendous comeback to create an opportunity. The Iron Bowl win in and of itself, dropping in a fishbowl, is tremendous. But it creates an opportunity that still exists that if Alabama lost on Saturday, I don't believe the opportunity would still be there. Want to head out now? Huntsville, Alabama. Every morning you can hear him. 97.7 ESPN. It is Drew DeArmond. Drew, how are you today, man?
Good, Chuck. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you making time. Let's talk about Alabama and the performance the other day. I said that that was about as well as Auburn could have played. That was probably their 100%. And it, the big advantage, of course, was Auburn and Derek Mason figuring out, you know, half the Alabama offensive line could probably be gotten. Just give me your lowdown on Bill O'Brien and trying to navigate around that, and then finally Bryce Young making some plays.
Well, you know, it was just a tough situation because, you know, I think Derek Mason kind of changed his M.O. I wouldn't be surprised if Kirby Smart does that this Saturday as well. I think they brought a lot more pressure than he'd been bringing, either blitzing or just telling, you know, Derek Hall and the outside backers to pin their ears back and rush, because I think they had a good feel for that they could stop Alabama's running game, make them one-dimensional, and that's certainly what they did. They got after Bryce. They watched the film from Texas A&M. They watched it from LSU. I think they felt like they just had to be aggressive because they had nothing to lose, and they certainly played that way. Now, I thought defensively, if you had told me before the game, Chuck, Alabama was going to hold Auburn to less than 160 yards and 10 points, I would have basically guaranteed a win. But I think Alabama's just got a lot of issues up front, and it really starts with right tackle. Damian George really struggled, and the thing that's really disturbing is they tried to put Kendall Randolph over there to help out, to chip, and he was basically ineffective as a pass blocker as well. I've always thought, I know his family, I know the kid very well, he's a great kid, but he's just never been a great pass blocker out on an island as a tackle either. It's why he was never starting offensive tackle at Alabama, and so Alabama just really struggled. They put Owens back in. You know, he did a decent job. They had to go to their third center, Seth McLaughlin from Buford, Georgia, because Darian Dalcourt was slowed. So, I mean, I'll say this. There's a lot of consternation, a lot of thoughts about play calling. When you can't block a simple zone play, you know, running play, and get any push, and when you can't pass protect, it's hard to call plays. And so, I mean, to Auburn's credit, they played like their hair was on fire. But I will say this. The mistake Bigsby made going out of bounds, basically, that's what it helped Alabama be able to tie the game and then win it in overtime. Really, Auburn should have won the football game. But Alabama found a way. Champions sometimes do that, and they did this past Saturday. Bryce Young had a Heisman moment, I thought. He overcame a lot of adversity. He took a beating, but he still threw for 317 and the two scores. And I thought down the stretch he made some big-time throws. And you got to give Ja'Cory Brooks a lot of credit for stepping up on that last drive when they did not have Jamison Williams, because when he went out of the game, Alabama's big play threat basically was gone, and then they had no B-Rob for most of the fourth quarter, and Alabama was just basically on fumes offensively by the end of the game.
Let's talk just anything you may project. And it's only Monday, by the way, and you ain't in Tuscaloosa. But who would you expect to play? And you went there. Who would you expect to play center and right tackle Saturday against Georgia?
Well, I'd have to go back with Chris Owens, the senior, going back to right tackle. The center spot, it's going to depend on Dalcourt and his availability. I think McLaughlin did a good enough job to where they could trust him to play. I know that's saying a lot when you're going up against the best defense in college football, basically. I still think Dalcourt might be healthy enough to play, though, but they're going to have him on a short leash with McLaughlin ready to go because they need Owens at right tackle. I don't think there's any question about that after what we saw. And then with Brian Robinson, from what I'm hearing, he tweaked his hammy in addition to the ankle injury that he suffered. So he's definitely banged up. It's going to be interesting to see if he tries to go. The last time Alabama had a hamstring issue, injury of this magnitude, Chuck, was probably 2018 in the college football semifinal against Oklahoma, when the best pass rusher on the team that year, Christian Miller, went down. He practiced for the week, at least they said he did, and you thought he was going to try to give it a go and play. He never played a snap in that game. It was a huge loss for Alabama. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with B-Rob. If he can't go, it's going to have to be Trey Sanders.
Is he healthy?
Chuck, he's as healthy as he can be. I mean, he's still recovering from that car accident. Yeah. I don't think he's completely recovered. I don't think he has his burst. But he would be what they have left. And, I would think – here's where I think, and this is just a hunch on my part, if I'm Nick Saban and I know B-Rob is going to be limited – you're going to go with Trey Sanders, but I would certainly – Christian Leary and DeMoye Kennedy will be the next couple guys up. But I would put a package in for Jalen Milroe, either as a Wildcat or even on end arounds, because he's got explosive speed. You've got to find a way, Chuck, to generate some semblance of balance or a running game, because against this Georgia front seven, there's no way Alabama can come out and throw the ball 50-plus times, in my opinion. Bryce Young will take a beating. They've got to find a way to create some sort of balance with some kind of running game against the Dogs on Saturday. If B-Rob is only even if he can play, he's not going to be 100%. So to me, you've got to find another avenue to generate some rushing yards.
All right, Auburn very limited the other day, obviously on offense, but I'll give Bama credit. They stepped up and made some plays. Fedarii Mathis looked like he wanted to scrap the entire game. Talk about them going against Georgia, though, because Georgia it's a different animal offensively. And Pickens, I don't know how – I mean, it's kind of like Waddle in the championship game. He was there, but I don't know what kind of a factor it's going to be. Just give me a quick overview. We got about a minute and a half here. The Bama defense that you saw as recently as 2 days ago – just early projection about what you think happened Saturday with Georgia.
They've got to stop the run, first and foremost. They got to stop Zeus. They got to stop Cook. And I think Cook is really underrated. They've got to, stop the run and contain Georgia's running game. I don't think they'll completely shut it down, but they've been really good against the run this year for the most part, Chuck. If they can hold Georgia around 110 to 120, they've got a shot, because I think they can rush the passer. You talked about Will Anderson, 14.5 sacks, 86 tackles. I think he's the best defensive player in college football. But don't forget Dallas Turner. He started to settle in. He had two more sacks Saturday against Auburn at the Sam spot. He can rush the passer as well. Kadarian Mathis has been really good. I think Byron Young doesn't get enough credit. He's really started to play well. He and Mathis and also Tim Smith, because I think he'll be in there a lot for DJ Dale. They've got to slow the run down, but the key is they can't have busts. They've got to, they can't give Brock Bowers or Pickens or McConkie or whoever big vertical plays. They've got to make Georgia earn it. They've also got to play well in the red zone and make them settle for some field goals. I've got the game 28-20 Georgia. I just don't know if Alabama can score enough points, and I just don't know if they can, for four quarters, protect Bryce Young enough to give them a chance to score enough points to beat the Dogs. But I will say this, they're going to have to get two or more turnovers and get some help from that Georgia offense if they're going to have a chance to win in the fourth quarter.
Drew, I appreciate it always, man. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right, Drew DeArmond, 97.7 ESPN. You know what the conversation, and I'm even talking like some championship Saturdays, before championship Saturday, some like versus Missouri or the Treyon Harris Florida team. Hey, Drew, what's Bama got to do to win? Well, as long as they don't turn it over. Like, Drew just gave a minute and a half answer. Whereas normally it's like, hey, don't turn it over. Well, 2021 is a little bit different edition of Alabama Crimson Tide football.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
A new head coach will almost always want to keep one. I've talked about this before. You need, and it's beneficial. Clean sweep. It's noon. It's morning in Columbia. No. We want to retain one assistant from the previous staff. This administrator's difficult to deal with. Make sure you don't park there. This kid's a turd. Make sure that this kid is on the leadership count. I mean, you got to have somebody walk you through some stuff that you only know if you've been around. So you're going to keep one anyway, but you don't plan on it being having any sort of permanence. I don't know who LSU's new head coach is going to be, but Durante Jones, like you normally don't keep the coordinator. I'll give him credit. After the Florida win and then the announcement that your head coach wouldn't be back, I thought it'd be coaches and players jumping off the ship left and right, and the defense actually got settled. Did not play winning football, but they played really good football on defense. And then the past 2 weeks, Louisiana Monroe, and then a big win against Texas A&M, and they finished 6-6, and that's not nothing. I want to welcome on right now, host of After Further Review every afternoon, 3 to 6 Central Time in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, all throughout Louisiana. It is Matt Moscona. Matthew, how are you on this Monday?
Tired and confused. How are you?
Well, I'm a little tired as well, but that's just because, you know, it's football season and you use the DVR a lot. What are you confused about?
Who LSU's coach is going to be? I thought you had some answers for me, Chuck.
Well, I can tell you who it's not going to be. It's not going to be guys who have said, I'm not going to take the job, like Jimbo. It's going to be guys who have signed contracts. Three categories. Now, this is impressive. Guys who have said, I'm not leaving, like Jimbo. Guys who have actually gotten a new contract, like Mel Tucker. And then guys who have said, I'm not leaving, but then left for somewhere else, like Lincoln Riley. Now, you tell me, though, because Woodward's reputation is, if you hear the name, it's probably not correct. Well, I've heard Mel Tucker and Lincoln Riley and all of that. Who are the names that maybe we haven't heard as much of that are real candidates?
That's just it, Chuck. I think everybody is a little bit at a loss right now. There are a couple of different factions. There are people around LSU who believe that Scott Woodward has his guy and that it's in the final stages and there's going to be an announcement within maybe the next 24, 48 hours. And there are people who believe that they really were all in and Lincoln Riley was their top choice and they felt like they had made a very compelling sales pitch and were going to get something done and then got left at the altar and he picked USC. So I don't know. I mean, you're going to ask me for names and it's all names that everyone's talked about and there's pros and cons to any of them. I mean, do they go back down the Brian Kelly route? Is there a faction that wants to make a call to Dabo? Do you circle back to Jimbo again? And Scott Woodward has the reputation of being that big game hunter, right? Going after big names and landing whales like he did with Kim Mulkey in the basketball search. Everybody knows that by now. But, I mean, Chuck, the longer this goes, man, the list of potential candidates is dwindling.
Well, let's talk about on field and how it finished. And tell me why. Why is always the interesting part to me as well, is why wasn't it after the Florida game, a repeat of 2020? Yeah, I'm out. Coaches looking for their next job. The team looking disorganized and distracted and dismissive. Why didn't all of that happen?
So I think a couple of things. And one of them is actually really impressive. They played a lot of guys, Chuck, that weren't expecting to play. I mean, keep in mind, Derek Stingley, Elias Ricks, your two best corners, both injured, didn't finish the season. Andre Anthony, Ali Gay, yep. Your starting defensive ends, season-ending injuries, out. Major Burns, one of your starting safeties, season-ending injury, out. I mean, what that forced was a bunch of guys that weren't expecting to play to finally get their opportunity, Chuck. And while you had some young guys that made some mistakes, it was also kind of like letting the puppy off the leash. You know, it wasn't guys that were going through the motions because the season was going down the toilet. It was guys that were pumped to get their first opportunity to play. And so they played really hard. And, I mean, then just fundamentally on the field, they just became a much more aggressive defense. I mean, Durante Jones just started introducing a lot of different stunts and blitzes. And just they became a very pressure-heavy defense, and it worked. They had the athletes to pull it off.
Well, let's talk about what the next coach will inherit. And, I'm going to assume, and I haven't heard anything one way or the other, and I haven't even investigated, and I'm not interested today. But if there is a new coach and he has Max Johnson, tell me the Max Johnson that exists in Baton Rouge right now. What is that kid as a quarterback with a season and a half of playing? What is he right now? Because it ain't all good habits he's developed.
Yeah. It's a kid that's probably frustrated because, let's be very clear, LSU's offensive operation this year was poor at best. And you can't put that all on the shoulders of a 19-year-old or 20-year-old college sophomore. Jake Peets was in over his head as an offensive coordinator, and it showed anytime you watch this team play offense. Max does not have a strong arm. He certainly doesn't have the arm that's going to wow you, but he is the guy that you could tell is the son of a quarterback. Mechanically, I think is sound and makes good decisions with football. That's why he kept the turnovers down, which was important to whatever success LSU did have this year. You talked about bad habits, and some of those were formed out of the fact that he got killed this year, Chuck. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have numbers in front of me for sacks or pressures, but, boy, even the game-winning touchdown pass on Saturday to Jeray Jenkins, if you go back and watch the All-22, he gets clobbered. Total missed assignment by the offensive line, and Max just gets crushed. But he stepped up and delivered a great pass for the game-winning touchdown. So, honestly, Chuck, you got a quarterback that I think is frustrated. He's got a five-star tight end brother who's committed, who's probably going to do whatever you follow his brother. And, you know, a dad who certainly understands the landscape and probably waiting, like everyone else, to see who the coach is going to be to see if he's going to be here next year. Because I don't believe that both he and Garrett Nussmeier finished their careers at LSU. And a big part of that is going to be predicated, I think, on who the next coach is.
All right. This is just guesses, and maybe I'm just throwing you a softball. Hey, talk about how great these kids looked at times. But Brian Thomas, Betch, Neighbors, Deion Smith, four freshmen, and they all had moments at times. Tell me who you think is back and what role, and just who really stood out to you among that bunch. Because that's not the easiest thing. People think that's easy to transition from high school to college at wide receiver, and it is not.
It's by far the deepest, most talented position group LSU has. I can't even think of a close second. And we didn't even talk about Kayshon Boutte. I mean, Kayshon Boutte broke his ankle against Kentucky, didn't play the second half of the season. He'll be back next year. He's already committed to that. So you put Boutte at the front of that. The thing that's really impressive about all the guys you just mentioned, too, Chuck, is that they all have different skill sets. You know, yeah. Besh, they kind of played in a hybrid tight end role, and he became really the sort of security blanket. Brian Thomas is a mismatch, big 6'5 kid. You know, Malik Neighbors and Deion Smith can blow the top off. They're explosive. They're really good there, man. They got to find running backs. You know, they got to find linemen. They got to find a lot of guys on the defensive side to supplement their numbers. I mean, the roster is a little bit of a mess right now, but receiver, there's no mistaking, man. Whatever coach comes in, if he wants to throw the ball, he will have no shortage of targets next year, because I think all those guys you mentioned are back next year.
All right. So, I mean, everybody, whether it's Raymond or like Rodney Garner at LSU, I mean, at Auburn, there's always assistants that you think, Odell at Florida State, I've mentioned before, they kind of, you know, they're like furniture. They come with the program, you think. What do you think the environment is right now in the LSU football? Like, they hire – it's going to be a head coach who's used to getting his way. Do you think anybody gets brought back, and it could be something as important as the DC?
I find it really hard to believe that Durante Jones or Jake Peets are back. As a matter of fact, I think both will be gone.
Okay.
You got to give a head coach an autonomy to hire his own coordinators. I believe Corey Raymond will return, and I believe so far as to say that they've got a deal in place to have him back already. He's the most important assistant they have on staff, Chuck. I mean, all the DBU stuff. I mean, these kids come to play for Corey Raymond. I mean, he's critical, and any coach would be stupid not to retain him. So I believe Corey Raymond's back, and then I believe Brad Davis, who's going to be the interim head coach of the bowl game. When they remember they signed him away from Arkansas this summer, so it was a late addition to the staff, and they gave him a 3-year deal where most assistants get a 2-year deal. I do believe that unit made a lot of progress this year, and they like him a lot. So if I had to guess, I'd say it'd be Raymond and Davis would be those two that are back.
Wrapping up, Matt Moscona, host of After Further Reviews every afternoon, Baton Rouge, all around the state as well. Fan base, where are they right now? I mean, they don't have a coach, obviously, and that's going to carry the day. But as far as faith in Scott Woodward, for instance, big game hunter, looking forward to the bowl game, if that's possible. Just give me the pulse.
So beating A&M was nice, but nobody – the emotion wasn't around the second half of the season, Chuck. It's all been about the coach. And the reputation that you alluded to there with Scott Woodward had a lot of people very excited and believing the Lincoln Riley thing was going to get done. And so now you kind of get left at the altar and he picks USC instead. It's got a lot of people on edge here. I mean, it's – I hate to say it's full-on melt, but – the confidence in Woodward, I think, is dwindling, and he's got to deliver. And I believe he's got to deliver a big name, Chuck, but I just don't know who that is. And I think the fan base is very unsettled right now because the most popular name among fans was Billy Napier. But
was it true that he wasn't going to be considered at all?
Chuck, I will tell you with 100% certainty that Billy Napier was not interviewed or considered for this job. And with 100% certainty. Same with Dave Aranda. And there are a lot, you know this, there's a lot of political factions in Louisiana that have their say and get their way. And there were a lot of people associated that were not going to allow the ULL coach to be hired by LSU. And as short-sighted as that sounds, it's true. And I think LSU, so fans are miffed because I think fans would have been ecstatic to have hired Billy Napier, over the moon. And the fact that he wasn't even considered and now you're going to have to play him every year at Florida has people very, very much, on edge. So it's a little toxic here right now, man. And it will be until they name a coach. And a lot of people are hopeful that Scott's reputation plays out and they end up landing that big fish. But I don't know that there's a ton of optimism right now.
And they're going to have to write a check for about 14,000 bowl tickets and hope that fans, mail in enough for, to donate to military in the area or whatever. Have you even let your mind wander to a bowl destination for LSU?
Yeah, I think it's, I think I've got it narrowed down to one of five, which isn't really saying a bunch, but based on, you got 13 bowl eligible teams, Chuck.
Yeah, I know,
so
man.
There's 10 bowl tie-ins, so somebody's going to have to go to bowl games that aren't SEC tie-ins. The Independence Bowl in Shreveport makes sense. The Texas Bowl in Houston makes sense. The Liberty Bowl in Memphis could be a day trip. I think Birmingham or the other one would be Gasparilla, which is down in Tampa at the Tropicana Field. I think one of those is probably the destination. I mean, maybe LSU lucks up and ends up in the Gator Bowl or something like that, but I it's hard for me to see that happen, and I think one of those ones I just mentioned is most likely, and maybe Shreveport bound.
Gasparilla Bowl, that's at the baseball stadium in Tampa, correct?
It is. It's at Tropicana, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever been inside that stadium?
I have not.
Okay. If LSU plays a football game in that stadium, I want you to go just for the experience of being in that. It's an ashtray. I mean, it will wind up being your – it'll get the Moscona belt for worst stadium I've ever been in. Because it might have mine, and I've done games at Legion Field, and this may have the belt for worst stadium ever. I mean, it is a dump, man. You'll be like when Han Solo saw the Millennium – I mean, when Skywalker saw the Millennium Falcon for the first time. You know, you're like really, really underwhelmed by this. So I want you to go to that stadium, okay?
I hope I don't have to go to that stadium, but a trip to Tampa might be nice in December.
All right, Matt Moscona, thank you, brother.
All right, Chuck. See you, man.
Matt Moscona, at Matt Moscona on Twitter. Follow him, listen to him, et cetera, et cetera. You can find him all over the web. The story, it's actually, I said Tampa. It's in St. Pete, I think, is where that Tropicana Field is. And you've watched baseball games there, and maybe football. And was it the Beef O'Brady's Bowl that used to be the – okay, used to be the game down there. And you watch it, and you're like, are all the lights on? Like, I mean, did they turn on – all of the lights? And I've been told the story of how that stadium actually came to be. If you go back, I don't know, like 20-something years, The Major League Baseball had announced that the Gulf Coast is getting a team. We're calling it Tampa Bay. They announced the city of Tampa Bay, and all they were doing was announcing a city. And they said, it's not San Antonio, it's not Vegas, it's not Mexico City, it's Tampa Bay gets the team. Hey, the city of Tampa and the city of St. Pete decided race for a stadium. And so St. Pete, suspicion is without completed plans. The city of St. Pete said, well, by God, we're getting a baseball team in our city. Get to turn a shovel of dirt tomorrow. And so you had crews showing up just turning dirt, just like preparing a site. It's like writing a play as it's being performed. So that is in part why that stadium is such a hunk of junk. And so, yes, I guess the Gasparilla Bowl is being hosted now there and may host the LSU Tigers this year. All right, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back, wrap up on the money next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Kick return for a touchdown. And then we had two other really good returns. Then we had the drop punt. Then they dropped one. Each of us gave each other one. And then we gave them one on a safety on a got a little discombobulated there in the backfield.
Mike Gundy, head coach of potentially the conference champion Oklahoma State Cowboys, and he was talking post game Saturday after the Pokes. Take down Oklahoma, 37-33 was the final, and this might be, I should have looked this up and I apologize. Normally it doesn't matter, I should have known this. I think he's 3-3, what's his record? 3-14 maybe? 3-13 against Oklahoma, and he got a dub though. And it has not happened often in that series. I think it's been six straight was the tally. Lincoln had never lost, and now he's on his way out of town. So 37-33, that clinches a spot in the Big 12 championship game this coming Saturday, a spot for Oklahoma State. They will be playing two-loss Baylor. Oklahoma State has a plenty experienced quarterback and kind of a tough ground game, and then their defense. That's what they do, and they've got a veteran coach. Dave Aranda's in his second year at Baylor, and it's a good team, and they might have two quarterbacks. Did you see the what if Bo Hannon comes back from injury? You starting. That's what you do. We like to create these storylines, and Baylor played with a backup quarterback on Saturday, and they won. And so they're in the Big 12 championship game this coming Saturday. And if your star quarterback comes, well, what will you do? It's not a storyline. He plays. That's what he does. But like I said, it'll be against Oklahoma State. And I did not have the lineup for Saturday. Actually, it begins Friday night. I didn't have it. Neither did you. Oregon, maybe. Utah, probably not. And I said a couple of weeks back, I was like, folks, I think Oregon loses on the road this weekend, and Utah beat the dog out of them. It could happen again on Friday, which is unusual to be, because you don't play a team in college. You don't play a team twice in the same season very often, and it's difficult to beat them because of a principle I talked about earlier in hour one. So that's Saturday. That's Friday night, and then Saturday you've got the other four Power 5 games, and you might have gotten Alabama. You probably did get Georgia. There's a chance, though, that out of the 10 teams playing in the five Power 5 conference championship games, you might have picked one or two or maybe three of the combatants out of 10. Now, what does that mean? Bedlam, chaos. No, that's not what it means. March Madness. You know why we like Cinderella so much? Because Cinderella don't win. Because Cinderella gets your interest. And then Cinderella may even make it to the Final Four. Do you know the last thing we want? We don't want George Mason to be a national champion. We want them to upset Duke in the second round. So, anyway, Dan, how are you?
You know, I really want this framed, the final handshake for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, him with Mike Gundy in that black felt cowboy hat.
That was awesome.
That he was wearing.
Soaked to the bone.
Which, by the way, way to read the room there, Mike. And he's lived in Oklahoma long enough to know the type of Western wear for the season. It's felt hat season right now. Had he been wearing a straw cowboy hat, Chuck, I don't think he lives that down, especially if
wouldn't
he
come off as authentic.
No, if he goes to the western counties there in Oklahoma, that's not going to play well. I will say this. You know, I was looking at, you know, interest in, say, a job like Virginia Tech this weekend, and I got to have a little bit of a mea culpa here against a guy. Remember last year, I tried to get Dave Doran fired. Dave Doran went on to win 8 games and finish 8-4 last season for the NC State Wolfpack. 9 games this year. He has a chance, if they win the bowl game, to have the first 10-win season there. I don't know if even Chuck Amato did it when he had Phillip Rivers there. But the point is, he's won at NC State. Virginia Tech is a program right now where they probably have to have that pop season because they're no longer the national darling that they used to be. So a guy like Dave Doran, if he is low on your list, I'd bump him up a little bit because I think that's a guy who can really make you be something that you were hoping the last coach was going to make you be.
Yeah, he was in a strange spot. He would always pop when things got a little murky with his contract. He was bold enough to play footsie with other programs, figuring NC State, they're not heritage enough that they could move on if they still have me. And then he won big this year, so good for him. All right, wraps it up on a Monday. Be back tomorrow with more college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.